Today on Straight Talk Africa, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's four-nation visit to Africa. Mrs. Trump promoted the message of our Be Best Child Welfare Initiative during her stops in Ghana, Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt. What was the significance of her visit and what did Africans think of it? That's coming up next, right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk Africa live from the Voice of America headquarters in Washington. I'm Vincent McCorry in for Shaka Sali. Today we are discussing U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's visit to Africa. Now, U.S. First Lady Melania Trump has wrapped up her first visit to Africa with a goal of highlighting child welfare and promoting the work of the U.S. Agency for International Development on the continent. Her four-nation tour last week includes stops in Ghana, Malawi, Kenya, and Egypt. VOA's Paul Diho recaps her visit.
Melania Trump's first stop was last Tuesday in the West African nation of Ghana as she launched her first major solo international trip as U.S. First Lady. She landed in the capital of Accra and was welcomed by Ghana's First Lady, Rebecca Akufo-Addo, with dancing, drumming, and school children waving mini U.S. and Ghanaian flags. Mrs. Trump visited a children's hospital intensive care unit before going to the presidential palace. The next day, Mrs. Trump visited the infamous Door of No Return at a former slave trade outpost and gazed over the crashing ocean waves that carried millions of Africans to lives of servitude. Earlier, Mrs. Trump visited Emancy Manzi Palace, where a regional tribe leader granted her permission to tour the palace. A ceremony was held inside Obama Hall, a building on the palace grounds that was renamed after former U.S. President Barack Obama's visit in 2009. On her second leg of the trip, Mrs. Trump flew to Malawi upon her arrival at Kamuzu Banda International Airport. She experienced a different view of educating children as she visited Chipola Primary School in Lilongwe, the capital of Malawi. The school is among those that receive education assistance from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, including textbooks, but struggles with an enrollment of more than 8,500 students.
I appreciate all the support you have given us. Thank you all. God bless you. God bless your families. And God bless the United States of America.
Critics say while the First Lady highlighted USAID's work in Africa, the administration of President Donald Trump has been trying to cut the agency's funding by roughly 30%. In Nairobi, Kenya, Melania Trump said to the beats of African music as she was welcomed to an orphanage on Friday. She started her visit seeking to highlight conservation efforts by feeding baby elephants at Nairobi National Park and going on a safari there. One baby elephant made a sudden move on her and she momentarily lost her footing, but patting one's back and stroking the ear of another. Ironically, earlier this year, President Trump quietly signed an executive order allowing Americans to import body parts of African elephants shot for sport from Zimbabwe and Zambia, and encouraging wealthy big game hunters to kill the threatened species would help raise money for conservation programs. President Trump's adult sons, Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, are trophy hunters. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, who oversees the agency that lifted the ban, also is an avid hunter. Smiling for the cameras in the shadow of the Egyptian pyramids, the U.S. First Lady Melania Trump wrapped up her four-nation Africa tour in Egypt. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Well, thanks a lot, Paul, for that report. Joining us now are our three guests in studio with me is Emira Woods, representing the organization Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity, International Working Group member, and a VOA's White House correspondent, Patsy Widakuswara. And we hope to be joined by Fawn from Lilongwe, Malawi, by Benedicto Kondowe, he's a human rights advocate and executive director for Civil Society Education Coalition. A very warm welcome to both of you for now.
Great to be with you. Nice to see you hosting.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, let's start with Patsy, because you traveled with the First Lady. First, how was the reaction as you moved from country to country on the ground?
Well, first of all, let me say it was a very exciting but also challenging trip because this was a lot of countries in a short time.
Yeah.
If you're asking me about the reaction of the people there, I would say there are four camps. The first camp is the people who did not know about the visit, and I would say the majority of the people I spoke to did not know in advance about the visit. The second one is the people who think that this is a symbol or a gesture of goodwill from the American people. And, you know, by that point, I think they understand that First Lady Melania is a representative of the American people, not just of her husband. And then the third one is are people who are a little bit of suspicious about her motivation, including is she just here to make amends because of her husband's reportedly disparaging remarks about the African countries, or perhaps she's sending a message to her husband, and maybe we can talk about this later on in the program about what kind of messaging that she's trying to show to her trip, in her trip.
Wow, interesting. Now, Emira, when you heard that Melania Trump is traveling to Africa, her husband has not been there, and perhaps other than Rex Tillerson was there just before coming back and having to leave the job. We haven't seen a lot of American high officials on the continent. So what was your thought at that time? What did you think about the whole trip?
Well, I thought that the trip was timed as a distraction with everything going on here in Washington around hearings and issues of sexual harassment and on the rest. The trip came at a time when, you know, could turn eyes outside of the domestic arena to foreign issues, right? And I think when we remember that Rex Tillerson was actually fired, right? This was the last high-profile trip to Africa, the Secretary of State going to Africa, the first of the administration going to Africa now that they're 2 years in. And to see him summarily sort of fired literally during the trip made one wonder, well, what's going to happen during this trip? and to what extent are we going to expect sort of another shoe to drop? But I think what we saw was an attempt to hold up, particularly U.S. Agency for International Development, U.S. policy with Africa at a time when U.S. policy with Africa is in shambles, to be quite frank, right? Even the U.S. Agency for International Development is being threatened, as Paul in his segment said, you know, 30% cut of the funds to U.S. Agency for International Development and other kind of international programs. I think you see an administration still scrambling to fill senior posts when it comes to Africa to show that, in fact, those disparaging comments made towards Africa, you know, that there's a sincere apology, which still has not come from this administration.
Well, perhaps, Patsy, do you get the sense that some people felt like by Melania coming to the continent, in a way, she it was a kind of an apology indirectly to the disparaging remarks that the president has made about the continent, and also perhaps to reassure people that there is hope that there won't be as many cuts or any more cuts to the U.S. aid, and that people of Africa can expect the U.S. to continue supporting them?
Yes, and I think that's what I find very interesting about this trip is perhaps this is the first time a First Lady's visit sharing a message that is perhaps not 100% in line with the administration's. Because if we remember in Cairo, when Melania Trump was asked, what is the message of your trip? She said that the message is to show the world that we care. And at the same time, as you pointed out, USAID funding is being threatened to be slashed by the Trump administration. Of course, it's being blocked by Congress. And again, the other thing that I found quite perhaps jarring is when Melania Trump's office announced her visit in August, she said in a statement that this is, we want to do this to highlight that we are a global society. And then a month later, President Trump at the UN General Assembly said that we reject the doctrine of globalism. So there's some discrepancies and some question marks. And, you know, of course, this invites a lot of speculation as to what is the First Lady doing in this trip. Is this something to show that she has her own voice, the way that she said herself in Cairo, that it's important for me to have my own voice and it's important for me to express that voice? So because of all of this, it really does invite a lot of questioning and speculation from all of us.
And we need to talk a little bit about that, having our own voice, but also having our own agenda. But before I bring it back to the studio, I want to try to go to Malawi in Lilongwe, where Benedicto Kondowe is standing by on the phone. How are you?
I'm good, and you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, when you heard that First Lady Melania Trump was coming down to Malawi, what was your immediate reaction and what were your expectations?
Our immediate reaction as a country was that we're not so sure that the First Lady would finally land here in Malawi, considering that she is the First Lady to the most powerful country in the world. And a trip like that one is bound to get a message that perhaps the First Lady would not be actually making to Malawi. So we were hopeful, but not very much knowing that the First Lady will finally land here in Malawi. So the expectations were quite high, looking at the status of the First Lady, as I already hinted, being the First Lady of the most powerful country in the world.
And we saw a few protests in Malawi. What were they all about and what did you make of them, given that some people are very excited to see her?
I can't hear you.
There were some protests in Malawi, some demonstrations. Did you at least get to know about them and what do you think it was all about?
Indeed, there were demonstrations before the First Lady landed here in Malawi, which were essentially to do with the economic hardships that this country is going through. And these demonstrations were led by human rights activists, raising a number of issues to government to attend to. One being the issue of the plight of the education sector, that the standards in this country are declining. And so is the case with the health sector. So basically, issues were centering around, the delivery of public goods and services in this country, which appear to greatly affect ordinary Malawians.
Well, thank you. Now, let me bring it back here to studio. We talked about the First Lady having her own voice and her own agenda. In the first place, can she actually have an influential voice as far as the foreign policy is concerned? Can she have her own voice?
Short answer, no. Right? U.S. foreign policy is set largely by the Department of State, by the White House, by the administration. So, I think what we see is a First Lady that is maybe wanting to lay out an agenda of, globalism and engagement with the world, but really an administration that's not necessarily in line with that. So I don't think that the First Lady will be, her trip is in any way setting out policy for the administration at all. I think it is a photo op, a good photo op perhaps for the administration at a convenient time, but not necessarily anything that will have any lingering impacts in terms of policy.
And talking about
a
photo op,
I do want
yes.
to add on that yeah. point, though, something very interesting. When I spoke to people in Malawi, actually, an analyst there who's saying that, well, of course, the First Lady, this is a goodwill tour. She is non-elected representative. Perhaps she doesn't have any say in foreign policy, but you never know about bedroom politics. That was his statement. Yeah, and then he also said that perhaps one of the other things that she can do is basically to give President Trump some sort of enlightenment in terms of looking at Africa in a more nuanced way rather than, this perhaps not very well-defined context right now, which is just to look at Africa in the sense of countering China's influence or helping the fight against terrorism or just as a humanitarian aid. So maybe this will give some color or nuance. Of course, this is is the hope of people that I spoke to there. Whether or not it's true, it remains
kind of a softer side of foreign policy here. But if I may stay with you, Patsy, you know, the media, especially the American media, of course, it didn't seem to actually recognize. Perhaps they emphasized that part, that there was not so much of a voice and an agenda here, because they focused so much on a fashion.
The hat.
The hat and all that.
Well, let me just say that, first of all, the White House did not give a lot of information in advance of this trip. They were very, very guarded about the itinerary. They were giving us reasons, for example, like security. But, you know, normally when we go on trips like this, itinerary is given in advance for planning purposes. So the White House did not do this in advance and did not give us a lot of information about what she will be doing other than bringing her Be Best message to Africa. So, in terms of substance, there was not a lot for us to report. So perhaps that is one of the reasons why the media is focusing so much on the First Lady's fashion choice. Granted, Melania Trump herself said, please look at what I do, not what I wear. But if we look at the entire trip, I think it's very clear that each outfit was also well thought out. She is, of course, an ex-model. She knows how to communicate through fashion. So I don't know. I mean, I agree, there's a disproportionately large amount of coverage on the hat and, you know, the fact that it's an out-of-Africa theme or perhaps colonialist. There's all these criticisms about her wardrobe and not enough attention given on her very, very good focus on funding for USAID. And if you can see from each step of her stop, she always visits, you know, the hospital in Ghana, that's USAID funding, the school in Malawi, also USAID funding, the children that attended her the performance in Kenya also. So, but this was all glossed over because of the hat.
And, you know, it's not the first time she's dressed in something that she had dressed in something that people talked a lot about. And, you know, apologies on behalf of the little baby elephant. We meant well, you know. That's how we say hello, elephant language.
That's how a Tembo says hello.
Yes, Tembo says hello and also appreciates the fashion. Yeah. nothing very personal. Malawi, do we have Benedicto on the phone? Benedicto, if you can hear me.
Yes.
The question of the state of the economy of Malawi, you're saying many people, of course, are petitioning the government to do more, to do better. And my distinguished guest here, Mira Wood, is talking about the U.S. cutting back on aid to Africa. But we know that the United States is also promoting the agenda that African nations and other nations should start being self-reliant. It's time to stop relying too much on U.S. aid. You, as a person who advocates for more help, especially for kids in school in a country that is extremely poor, what would you say? Does Malawi have the capacity to plow ahead without so much help from outside?
I would be honest to say that Malawi on its own doesn't have the capacity to really see to it that the right to education is actualized by all within the context of not leaving anyone behind. I must admit that since 1994, we adopted free primary education, which was an effort to see to it that every school-going age child has an opportunity to go to school. Infrastructure-wise, it remained the same, nothing much changed. It meant that the schools became overcrowded because we did not add more on infrastructure. The number of teachers had also remained the same, meaning that the teacher-to-teacher ratio had gone quite high. And these are realities that as a country we're still trying to resolve. But also considering that the economy of Malawi is quite small, we have been unable as a country to make greater size. And that's why from time to time we rely on humanitarian aid as well as development aid, budget support from cooperating partners. And that's where support from USAID among other international institutions available in Malawi become particularly important. You note that USAID, for instance, is supporting the National Reading Program, which is one of the biggest programs being supported in this country. The aim is to improve the literacy rate, which is quite critical because currently, statistically, the literacy rate is around 64%, which is quite on the lower side. So if we are to make progress, not just within education, but even in other sectors, I think it is particularly important for us as a country to pay significant attention to education, because if indicators in the education sector are impressive, they have the potential to transform other social sectors, be it in the health sector as well as in the education sector.
And Benedict, it's good you mention the nation, Malawi, to pay attention to that very important objective. Amira, you know, you may make the argument that the United States needs to give more, but some people have said perhaps Trump will be good for the continent of Africa. It's time to scale down on foreign aid, because in so many cases, African leaders who are in positions have proved that they do not necessarily put so much of their good help, good aid that comes from outside into good use. Some have pocketed some of this money. Perhaps the USAID money may not easily get into their pockets, but like, it's time for them to start having some sense of discipline and organize better, utilize their resources even better to show that they're maturing. The countries are growing.
Yeah, well, a couple things on that, Vincent. First, I think we have to always remember that if you look at remittances, monies that are coming from the diaspora to the continent, remittances far outstrip aid and trade combined. Second, if you look at the outflows, the monies going out of the continent in capital flight to whether it's tax havens, we've seen now the Panama Papers, a series now of investigative reports, thanks to brilliant journalists around the world, including those on the continent, that have said more is flowing out of the continent than flowing in. So what is needed in places, whether it's Malawi, Uganda, or Egypt, or any of the countries, Kenya, is actually looking at those vital resources that are throughout the continent. You know, it is the oil, the liquefied natural gas, it is the mining. That is why Africa is so central,
so
not only to the U.S. and China, but to the world.
So
what happens is that, you know, those resources have to actually, you know, fuel the economies through its domestic resource mobilization.
Which makes a case for people like President Trump that the continent shouldn't be looking outward, you know, all the time. It's time to start putting into good use the resources within the continent and manage them better so that you can fund education, you can fund health care. Otherwise, why should you have the few powerful men enjoying good lives and their children studying abroad, their families going abroad for health care, but their people cannot?
Well, clearly what we have, we can have a whole conversation about education, because what's going on is not only in Africa, but here in the U.S., is a push actually to privatize education. When you look at the public education that was available in places like Ghana and Malawi, and this push now to privatize, again, it's happening here in the U.S. as well, right, under Secretary of Education DeVos, which is saying that the private sector can do education better. So you have an undermining of public infrastructure for education, for healthcare. So some of these kind of global trends, I think, have to actually be reversed in order for us to get our core social services like education and health on track.
I would like to add on that point, when the U.S. is perhaps pulling or creating some sort of vacuum in terms of an engagement with Africa, whether it's investment or humanitarian aid, don't forget that China is filling in that vacuum. And the difference between China aid and U.S. aid is that Chinese aid comes without precondition, so without any kind of good governance control, without any kind of environmental control. So what is happening on the ground is that all these Chinese money are coming in to the leaders. We don't know whether it's being used for a public public good. What we do know is that, you know, the Chinese have their own agenda. Mostly it's about extraction of natural resources. So this is, of course, something to consider for the Trump administration as they reduce their engagement in the
continent. So in other words, if you really want to help African countries, especially entrenched democratic values and respect to human rights, you need to continue engaging and even giving them more help rather than leaving a gap that will be filled out by the Chinese who really don't care.
I don't think it's in my position to say one way or another, but I'm saying that that is what's happening. If we
That's
are reducing engagement,
let's
then the Chinese are filling in.
Now, let's see what Benedict thinks. Benedict in Malawi, Lilongwe, what do you say? Do we have you in Malawi?
Hello.
Yes.
Yes. I wanted to say that I think we must understand that many countries in Africa are very poor. I do admit that we need to strengthen our governance systems, transparency and accountability, maybe to promote fiscal discipline, to see to it that the limited revenue that these countries are able to generate on their own are used for intended purpose. But that said, still more of these countries may not have the capacity to provide goods and services that the citizenry require. And on that basis, it is still an issue that the development humanitarian aid is a way to look at, to fill in the deficit which is created by the lean economies that they have. So the need for continued engagement in a more mutual way is important. The mere fact that foreign aid is being reduced by the U.S. government does have a negative impact on many of the African countries. But beyond that, I would agree that we need to build stronger governance systems that will make sure that leaders are made to account and that resources which are generated locally are used for intended purpose, because that's the only way to go. Because with real economies, what is happening is that these countries are borrowing more, and whatever revenue these countries are generating, they end up being spent on actually paying back the loans which they owe these rich countries. So I think there's need to balance up. Okay. In terms of the commitment of these countries to pay back the money that they borrow, to the need to provide goods and services to the citizens.
All right. Now, Emira, quickly before we go to break, you know, everybody likes children when we see kids, you know, there's a sense of compassion. Do you think Melania's visit, especially going to schools and healthcare areas and touching babies and holding babies, could have that kind of a positive impact on even the president when it comes to when you're looking at the papers and saying we need to cut here, but when you say, come on, look at those babies, they need this. Do you think perhaps that is the big impact that trip could have?
I wish I could say yes, but Vincent, I think we have evidence that it's not. We looked a short time ago of children in this country that are being separated from their families in this horrific immigration scheme that is holding families, including children, in detention. Now, Trump saw that, Melania saw that, the world saw that, and yet it has continued unabated, right? So I think we've got to say it would be nice if this would have an effect in terms of policy change, but the reality is that it doesn't. And let's look at one example. Melania's family herself, they went through a family unification. Right? You know, family unification as an opportunity for immigration to the U.S., her own family. And yet, what we see, particularly with regard to Africa, is this administration shutting the borders, shutting the doors, saying no to even families being reunited, calling it chain migration in a negative way. And so even Melania's own experiences don't seem to matter when it comes to public policy, either domestic or foreign
actually,
policy.
Actually, Patsy, did you get the sense that people can relate to that in a way, in that she's also one of us in a way? She came from somewhere and went to the United States, and here she is, the first lady visiting Africa, but in a way kind of different than a typical American.
The people that I talked to did not see her that way. Most of the people that I spoke to did not know anything about her, other than the fact that she's married to Donald Trump. Now, I contrast that with previous first ladies. For example, I would ask some questions about Michelle Obama. I would ask some questions about Laura Bush. And what stuck in the minds of the people that I spoke to were the actual programs that those first ladies, previous first ladies, brought. Girls' Education by Michelle Obama, PEPFAR and AIDS, Laura Bush, which of course were in line with their husband's policies. Mm-hmm. So in terms of whether or not people saw Melania as somebody perhaps separate or different or more part of them, that's not something that at least that I saw on the ground.
The fact that people didn't even know she was going, it's kind of enigmatic.
I think that is perhaps intentional by the White House, because they really wanted to keep it low key so that they control the message, because this is her first international trip. They didn't want a media circus.
Maybe next time. Well, you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of our discussion in just a moment.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward, to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Well, a reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, and you can also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, guest host Vincent McCoury discusses Africa's land ownership and the challenge of land reform. We'll examine Africa's land redistribution and the fundamental issue of land inequality on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. Today we are talking about the significance of U.S. First Lady Melania Trump's visit to Africa. Our guests are Amira Woods, representing the organization Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity, International Working Group member, VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widakuswara, and Benedicto Kondowe, Human Rights Advocate and Executive Director, Civil Society Education Coalition. Well, before we went to break, I think I kind of interrupted one of you, but maybe let's go to the gentleman in Malawi. And we did mention earlier on about these protests, and Patsy was there, our White House correspondent was there. She did actually mention a bit of the placards you saw. Maybe actually, Patsy, tell us a little bit. Yeah. It was interesting to see.
There was a handful of protesters. It wasn't a huge crowd, I must stress that first. But some of the signs were, of course, upset with the remarks that reportedly were made by President Trump last year about certain African countries that was derogatory or considered derogatory. And then, of course, I think Malawians are also very upset about the planning to pull out funding for reproductive health from the USAID programs in 2017. So there was general anger, but by and large, again, most people did not know that the First Lady was coming to visit.
Mm-hmm. Now, Amira, do you think, in your assessment, that her trip would have any indelible mark? It would be remembered a year, 2 years from now, or is one of those that may be forgotten once there's a visit by someone else?
I feel like it's already forgotten, Vincent. I'm sorry. But it's only been a week and it's forgotten.
Kind. Yeah.
But I think, you know,
still remember
I think
the hat, though.
I remember the hat, that's true. But I do think that what we have is a president who has consistently made disparaging comments. It's not only the S-hole countries, but then it's also more... at the UN, not this year, but last year, saying that his friends are in Africa getting rich.
Right. You know? This was in front of an investment forum, in front of African leaders.
With African heads of state, right? So again, sort of undermining the power of African people to kind of determine their own future and all of these issues of, there are resources there, but it's for us to get rich, and almost ignoring the inequality that's being kind of fostered through these policies. Mm-hmm. And then more recently, for the president to then, for the first time, tweeting about Africa, to hold up a white supremacist comment mm-hmm. about South Africa mm-hmm. and the land, farmers, yep. you know, creating an issue that didn't exist mm-hmm. in terms of people being killed, you know.
So in some respect, you can say.
Because he saw something on Fox News. Yeah. So what you see is a president that's kind of off kilter, really, when it comes to Africa. And so the trip of a first lady going in to try to salvage that really does very little when the weight is so heavy on the negative end. And so I do think that the trip will not only not have very much impact on policy, but will also not very much impact people's consciousness of what's possible in terms
of
U.S.
engagement. So perhaps it would help if the president goes and now he's accompanied by the first lady. Maybe it would make a difference.
I do want to point out the fact that I think it is a little unfair to expect Melania Trump to undo all the damage that her husband has done. I don't think this trip should be considered as, you know, should be expected to counter all the past rhetoric. Yeah. This is a goodwill trip, and by all accounts, this is a very traditional goodwill trip. You know, previous first ladies have done goodwill trips to Africa, has mostly chosen this kind of very friendly, warm, fuzzy topics, you know, children, maternal health, conservation. So she's doing this like previous first ladies have done. It's just that it's a very non-traditional administration. So having said that, I would also like to point out that, yeah, I think there are a lot of, you know, hurt and upset feelings when I talk to people on the ground, not just on the issues that you mentioned, but also the general perception is that the Trump administration does not have a very nuanced view of policies in Africa. Again, it's just seen as a counter to China to fight terrorism and also as humanitarian aid. I don't think there's a coherent strategy from the Trump administration to see Africa beyond humanitarian, to see it as strategic, to see it as economic. Now, granted, President Obama and President Bush did not really have a coherent African policy until later in their terms. So perhaps we'll see that mm-hmm. later on.
Now, but if I may go to Benedict in Malawi, we know that the First Lady came along with a donation of donated books of what, 1.4 million to this school, which is said to have up to what, 8,500 kids. Now, with that kind of gesture, do you think that is what will stain the minds of the kids, but also of the people of Malawi, that, you know, she came and did something, and perhaps you wait for a follow-up from the U.S. government?
Yes. Let me state that one of the greatest challenges that we have in Malawi in the education sector is an adequate number of textbooks. And therefore, the donation that Mrs. Trump, the First Lady, had given to this country had come at the right time. Because if you look at the book pupil ratio for most of the subjects, it's 1 to 10 for some subjects. It's as high as 1 to 15. So that donation for us was quite timely. But more than that, we believe that Mrs. Trump was a symbol of goodwill. But beyond that, was a symbol of hope, especially among a girl child, because one of the biggest programs that we have in this country is to do with girls' education. So really interacting, especially for the school that she had visited, but also the interaction that she had with the media, it was a big motivation for a young child to really see the First Lady getting to a school, which in our view would attempt to turn around perhaps the perception that the U.S. government has about Africa. Of course, I must agree with the earlier speaker that there is quite little that Melania could do to fix damage that Donald Trump has done in terms of the negative perception or attitude he has had about Africa. But the mere fact that she was here for us, that was trying to portray a goodwill by the U.S. government, as well as the commitment of the USAID that we have in this country about the commitment to see to it that we achieve the right to quality education in this country.
Now, Emira, would we also say perhaps there is some correlation between her kind of significance on the continent, the significance of her trip, the impact of her trip with her demeanor? She's kind of, when you look back, kind of different in the sense that she's quieter. She's not, you wouldn't compare to, say, other first ladies who may have been a bit more vocal right here at home. She's kind of more laid back. Would you say that maybe has worked against her in a way?
Well, I think it's hard following Michelle Obama. Right? So yeah. I think Michelle Obama had her own voice, understood that voice well before she married Barack, well before she got to the White House, and was able consistently throughout her life to use that voice really to advance issues that are close to her heart. And so I think that's why you see even now Michelle Obama out there talking about the importance of voting in this upcoming midterm election. There are issues that are close to her she continues to raise. I think the issue with Melania is really, she picked an issue around the
anti-cyberbullying.
Anti-cyberbullying at a time when her husband is doing all this bullying. Right?
Well,
so I think it doesn't come off as genuine, in either the U.S. context or in a global context.
But,
so,
it invites Patty, speculation.
Yeah, but yeah. Patty, and of course, then you pick up from there, and then you go to the Be Best. Mm-hmm. This Be Best kind of push, did the kids or the people she was talking to kind of understand what she's trying to talk about and she's trying to promote?
Well, first of all, she did not give a lot of speeches. She hardly spoke to press. I mean, she's giving an interview with ABC News that's about to be aired in a couple of days. But she spoke to press less than 5 minutes in Cairo. She spoke about a number of things, and she did say at that point, she wants to bring her Be Best message. Let me just outline for the viewers who may not know, Be Best essentially comprises of three pillars. The first one is child wellness, the second one is anti-cyberbullying, and then the third one is fighting opioid addiction. So I suppose what she's trying to bring to Africa is the first one, the child wellness. And I think this message does resonate in the countries that she visited, especially in Kenya, where the First Lady, Margaret Kenyatta, also has her Beyond Zero campaign of trying to eliminate maternal deaths. So whether or not her message was received, first of all, it wasn't communicated much. Like I said, the White House really wanted to keep this low key. They did not want the media circus. They want to control the message. So what we see are a lot of visuals, right? Visuals, Melania Trump with the children, with the elephants, with the pyramids in the background. But yes, like you said, I do agree that this is a very enigmatic first lady. It is very difficult to understand what she's trying to communicate. It invites speculation. Is she trying to perhaps jab her husband with certain things that she does? Again, these are all speculations.
Yeah. Now, Benedict, what's your take on that? Our way of communicating, perhaps being able to articulate the message to the people of Malawi on Be Best agenda.
Yeah, of course, in terms of the communication, I would agree that there wasn't much of communication. My own suspect is that she was actually sticking to the prescription in terms of what she might have been agreed. Because really the only moment where she tried to say something was when she was physically visiting the schools, interacting with learners. But beyond that, there hasn't been much of communication in terms of articulating strategic issues that she believes in, and how perhaps she thinks United States of America, be it through the USAID, could support. So, yes, it's correct that there wasn't greater communication on strategic issues that perhaps Malawians had wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm. Now, Emira, how about just looking at the intention and kind of overlook the ability to communicate it? I mean, judge her by her own demeanor and character, but look at the underlying intention, not only of what she does, but of what she kind of is trying to push out there, both in the United States, but also in Africa.
I think that's a tough one. I feel like the last wardrobe issue we had was after she went, to hurricane-stricken communities here in the U.S. South and wore
a jacket
that said,
"I don't care." Deliberate, or she just didn't.
Understand
what it was all about.
It makes you really question what is her message? Is it to undermine? a husband? Is it to, you know, it's really difficult to kind of understand what's happening. And so I leave it to others to say what's at the root of it. Mm-hmm. I just think that it makes it really hard to say, you know, her demeanor speaks a certain way in light of these kinds of experiences.
Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be very interesting to see in the next few weeks, months, and years to see if she will grow, if she will develop, if she will find her voice, you know, or will she continue to communicate in these enigmatic ways that invite speculation?
Because remember, this was her first solo trip abroad. So wouldn't we also look at that and consider the fact that perhaps this is the first experience in that, and perhaps if she made a repeat trip, it might yield different results. What do you think?
I wouldn't hold my breath, but we'll see.
And also consider the fact of her background. You know, this is not some senator's wife who grew up in a political background, who understand what is expected to be a politician's wife. She married Donald Trump when she had no idea that Donald Trump was going to run for president. And so she was thrust, perhaps, you know, somewhat against her will into this position of first lady. So it has taken her a while to fill in the role of first lady. I think it took her over a year before she announced her Be Best campaign. Yeah. So, you know, this is
so
just the situation.
She doesn't have the background of being like a lawyer or a typical politician's wife. It's a kind of a different thing.
Well, I hate to keep making comparisons, but Michelle Obama didn't expect to be
married
to the president.
She's a lawyer. She's a lawyer. She's a woman.
And also, she was a senator's wife.
She's a senator's wife, but a lawyer. I think we have to acknowledge that. Benedict, in terms of actually self-reflection, when an American official or a personality from the U.S. comes to a country like Malawi, do you think it is a moment to kind of think about why it's important to start doing everything that we can as a country, as a continent, to be self-reliant, to improve, to do better than just to kind of keep looking out, looking up to some other kind of country or some other people for the development of the continent?
It is correct that we can best develop as a country if we become self-reliant. And that's why earlier on I did indicate that we need to strengthen, you know, institutions of governance so that we are able to manage ourselves better beyond the resources that we're able to generate. Of course, this will take us time. As I said, our economy is too small, but the support that might come from cooperative partners should really be aimed at ensuring that we become self-reliant. The support should be directed towards building a resilient society, because if we rely on humanitarian aid, we cannot get out of poverty. It's actually impossible. So we really need to put our acts together as a country, have a clear agenda in terms of how we can transform the economy, how we can transform the public sector, how we can create a conducive environment for the private sector, because you also need a vibrant private sector if you have to turn around things in a country like Malawi. So those are some of the areas where perhaps both financial and technical support would be quite needed. Otherwise, we remain, you know, relying on humanitarian aid. We will continue to grow debt, which by the end of the day is actually also burdening taxpayers.
Mm-hmm. Emira, you know, some people have observed across the continent of Africa and said not many first ladies are engaged in some really beneficial programs. Some of them are complicit in the plundering of the economies by their husbands and their beneficiaries, of course, and therefore they're just busy having a good time. Do you think a visit by a first lady, in a way, could help become like an impetus to those of the first ladies on the continent who probably are not engaged in or involved in some kind of worthy cause to kind of pick up something and do something for their people?
I mean, I think it varies depending on the country, but I think there are around the continent, you know, some of the, it's not only the first ladies, but it's also looking at this increase of women's political leadership throughout the continent where, you know, women are stepping up to take on not only the first lady role, but the head of state role and cabinet level roles as well. So I think what we see is sort of women's political leadership that's heightening on the continent, and I think should be encouraged and spotlighted. And I don't really know how a trip of a first lady is going to impact that, but I think that has a much longer term impact in terms of particularly young girls and future leaders seeing their role in the political process. I mean, I think that's critical.
Patsy?
Yeah, I do want to add the point, though, that the people that I spoke to in Nairobi saw Melania Trump's visit as a sign of support to Margaret Kenyatta's Beyond Zero program, which is to eliminate maternal health. So I think, you know, no matter all the faux pas, all the fashion mishaps or speculations about motivation, we do have to highlight the fact that this is a goodwill trip, and it did generate goodwill, and it did make people feel good that, you know, somebody, the wife of the American president, came to visit their country and gave them attention. In particular with Kenya, Margaret Kenyatta's program, that has been a very successful program, or seen as a very successful program. It is in line with Melania Trump's agenda of child wellness. So I thought that was one country where the message perhaps resonated the most, you know.
I mean, I think, again, we're spending our time focused on, you know, wasn't it nice that she went to the schools? But and it was nice that she went to the schools. Mm-hmm. But I think the reality is that you have U.S. Engagement on the continent, especially if you look at countries like Egypt, through the U.S. military in very dramatic ways.
Yes.
Even if you look at Kenya, yes, you know, so the U.S. military is in expanding not only its footprint on the continent, but also, you know, sort of expanding its use of drones and, you know, private military contractors and private intelligence contractors across the continent.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're almost, you know, we're kind of being dangled this nice little picture.
There is
when
another
really, you know, there's this deeper, much more long-standing and detrimental engagement that's happening that far outstrips anything that USAID ever could do, both in terms of funding and political weight with this administration.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think we've got to kind of pull back the lens and understand that this administration is actually fully engaged in Africa, both in terms of the extraction of resources and in terms of the military expansion, in ways that we didn't quite see in the photo ops.
There is another element of this equation that we haven't touched upon, which is U.S. policy in Africa through the United Nations. Now, we just had a big moment this week. Nikki Haley is resigning at the end of the year. But don't forget that she, in her visit in 2017, was also able to interact with African leaders and got all the some of the demands that she wanted, including with President Joseph Kabila. She demanded elections, and then 2 weeks later, he announced his long overdue election. So there are still ways where the U.S. can be involved and engaged and come out with good solutions or something beneficial for the people. But again, this is something that's a big question mark for now, especially we don't know who is going to replace Nikki Haley. Speculation is Ivanka Trump or some other people, and we'll know in two or three weeks.
Well, clearly, South Sudan, in the arms embargo
that
she announced. And so the question is, does that represent the administration's policy going forward? Or
well, we'll wait and see. But I want to go to Malawi and Lilongwe. Benedicta, in terms of, you know, you probably listened to conversation here, but we're looking ahead and just wondering, for example, in terms of the real lasting impact of the First Lady's visit to Malawi. In terms of the influence, I talked about a little bit of how it could inspire. How would you compare what the First Lady of the United States is doing with some of the programs, perhaps the First Lady of Malawi, perhaps is a challenge to her, what she's doing on the ground? What do Malawians know about the First Lady's engagement?
I would say that the First Lady of Malawi is doing a number of programs, especially those focusing on a girl child, through her foundation, the Bin Foundation. And that's why perhaps the coming of Melania to Malawi is a great boost. And we hope that it will give the motivation to the second lady to do a bit more than what she's currently doing, but also to engage the president on the kind of support that his leadership may need to provide in order to see to it that the girls' education remains a top agenda in this country. But more than that, I think the issue of sustainability and really growing the economy is also something that as a country, we are deliberating upon. Not just on the point of view that we need to fight against corruption, which is also another deterrent to the economic development of this country, but also to see to it that whilst we provide conducive environment to the private sector, we must also desist from providing tax incentives which are harming the economy, but more so to also deal with the issue of tax evasion. So this would entail strengthening institutions like the Anti-Corruption Bureau, the Finance Intelligence Agency, among others.
Well, thank you, Benedict. And, you know, Mira, you did mention, the United States is actually engaged in Africa. People have to understand, just because it's scaling back on USAID, for example, funding, it doesn't mean it's not engaged. But hasn't it always been about strategic interest, first and foremost, about whatever resources they can benefit from? Is it up to the U.S. to focus on what is important to the African countries, or the responsibility of African countries to push hard and insist on engagement that is more beneficial to them than benefiting the Western powers?
I would say, Vincent, both and, not either or for those questions. I think first you have to have African countries setting their own agenda. And I would say, to add to what Benedetto had said before, it is not only the self-reliance, but it's the inter-reliance, the African Union bringing regional opportunities for trade, for investment, for development. I think that's critical. But I think the U.S. in a global world has to do better. And the U.S. has to understand.
About interest that is a look, China, Patsy, China is investing heavily across the continent. Some people feel like China has literally colonized the continent. Mm-hmm. Who is setting the agenda? Isn't it China?
I think we are living in a time with an administration that's very clearly saying America first.
Yeah.
And that is a policy that is translated everywhere in the world, not just in Africa. We see the U.S. pulling out of agreements from TPP to Paris to all sorts of things. So we are in an administration that is very nationalist, is very anti-globalist. This is very clearly stated by the president at the UN General Assembly in September. We reject the doctrine of globalism.
Yeah.
So there's no question about that, right? So it's just on the ground, what might that imply? What might that impact? And so going back again to the First Lady's visit, will it make a lasting impact? We have to look at it from a broader point of view of policy. If we look back to previous First Lady's visit, for example, Clinton, she brought with her husband's agenda of polio eradication. She made several trips. Laura Bush brought the agenda and the platform of anti-AIDS, and also $1 billion package from the Bush administration. Michelle Obama with girls' education. So those trips made a lasting impact because there is this big policy and big funding behind it, and the programs continued way after the First Lady mm-hmm. left the country. I don't think that's the case with Melania Trump's visit this time.
Okay. So just in a few words as we end the program, what do you think the United States needs to do now in that reality of America first? How can Africa leverage itself, and what is it that you think America should do?
Well, I think first and foremost, an apology is still needed from Trump himself. I think that is what many countries have said. I think second, pulling back on the push towards militarizing a relationship with the continent, because there is funding that's going to the continent, but it's going in the form of military hardware, training, and those such programs. Mm-hmm. And I think the more you're sort of arming and equipping militaries that then unleash human rights violations against civilians, I think you will end up with problems further down the road.
Okay.
So I would say, first, do no harm.
All right. Do no harm.
Yeah.
On that note, On that note, thanks to our guests, Amira Woods, Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity, International Working Group member, VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widokuswara, and Benedict Okundowe, Human Rights Advocate and Executive Director, Civil Society Education Coalition. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Butty. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa, and have a great evening.